Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thanks for listening. We're going to talk baseball today. Shane Dennis is the voice of the Shockers on ESPN+. He also co-hosts Sports Daily from 9 to 11 weekdays on KFH with Bruce Hurdle. Shane is also a former Shocker pitcher. He loves hair bands and he loves the movie Fletch. Shane, what is your favorite comedy bit from Fletch?
Oh, man. Can we just keep this about Fletch for
the whole podcast?
Minutes, however long podcast lasts.
That sounds like a good summer topic.
It does.
We got a lot of baseball to get to, but I appreciate your. That's a good thought.
Fletch F. Fletch, Dan Shepard.
So many of them. The Shockers. They are really on a roll. Obviously, they're 19-9. They're 7-1 in the AAC. They are number 44 in the RPI. They've won 11 of their past 12 games. They play at Tulane starting Friday. I feel like the Shockers are really making a push to get back into the sporting consciousness around here. Shane, how are they doing? How much are they registering now, maybe with people that they did not previously?
I'm trying to think of the tipping point or the time that they arrived back on the scene, because I feel like that too. The Riverfront game certainly didn't hurt, that showing down there. Now, whether 7,500 showed up because it was a brand new ballpark or 7,500 showed up because the Shockers were on display, I'm sure it was a little of both. But, at one point they were 8-8, right? And coming off of a 13-2 season that was cut short, but probably a little too short for some people to be sold on whether the program is back or not. But I think Eric Wedge, being the head coach, has the excitement that he's back, has bridged the gap between Gene and him and now gotten the program back up on an upward arc. But 19-9 is hard to argue with, but 7 out of 8 to start the league is getting some people on the bandwagon, and that's great.
You've always got to figure weather into the equation when talking about baseball attendance. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like it will take maybe an NCAA regional appearance or maybe two. I feel like getting on ESPN, winning those games, that brings in maybe the 50-50 fan to get back to that, kind of 2000. And what last time we saw it was 2008, right? When,
yeah.
Oklahoma State could roll in for a midweek game and you'd get 5,000 to 6,000 people. When almost no matter who they played, you had, 1,500, 2,000 diehards out there. I think it may take a while to get back to that, but boy, they're definitely on the right track.
I think because Eric Wedge is perceived to be cut from the same cloth as Gene Stephenson, probably has reeled a few of the diehards back in, maybe, I'm just guessing. It'll be interesting to see what happens, early May, when ECU comes to town and what Wichita State does in the interim. I'm not saying that they have to, win the series at Tulane and Cincinnati for the crowds to start showing up again, but I think for those that dropped off of the program because of the way Gene Stephenson parted ways with the university, probably soured some, and then, frankly, they didn't win. So the fact that Eric Wedge is here now, like I said from the previous question, the fact that he's here now, they're starting to win again, Gene is back in the fold, or getting the band back together. He's sitting up there in the skybox every single game rooting for the Shockers, so those that maybe stepped away from the program are now like, let's make another run of this because Eric is our guy. I think that has a lot to do with it.
He certainly gives them a head start in reclaiming some of those people. Boy, you're exactly right. That ECU series, if the Shockers continue to win, not at this pace, that would probably be unreasonable. But if they continue to win and if ECU comes into town and that's maybe two top 25 teams, that would be a real good, if you're an attendance watcher, that would be a good indication about how things are going. You mentioned Riverfront Stadium. I think that was a big step too. What were your reviews of the stadium?
I couldn't find anything wrong with that place. I walked around it two or three times. I spent as much time out in the concourse and among the fans as I did in the press box, but probably more just to kind of get a feel for it. see how people were interacting with one another, considering still pandemic rules, and that was a little strange. But I thought for the most part everybody behaved, did what they were supposed to do. I wasn't sitting down in the box seats, so I can't speak to that. But I just kept thinking, number one, it's about time. And number two, how long it seemed like we'd gone in between venues and instances like that, where a bunch of fans were together watching a sporting event. And you know, that venue was just everything you would hope it would be from the time I walked in to the time I walked out. I had nothing bad to say about it. And honestly, you'd be hard-pressed to find on social media so many people being in agreement about anything. But look up Riverfront Stadium, and I would defy you to find somebody that either didn't like the experience or didn't like the place.
I sat out in left field, out in the sun. I liked that. I talked to a bunch of people. Everybody's mood was good. I think it was helpful. You know, the parking, of course, was a big issue.
Sure.
It was helpful to get in the ballpark and see what they traded. You know, you get all the space in the concourse, all the space out in center field to congregate, to, I think they're going to have a kid zone at some point during the minor league season. You know, that's what you traded, is you get all that space for activity because you don't have as much parking. I thought that was interesting. Yeah, I thought it was a great day for the city. I thought great day for the wind surge and a really good day for Wichita State as well.
I don't know that it's a COVID thing or a we're not used to going to a live sporting event thing, but getting everybody in the ballpark in a timely manner, I feel like it took three innings for everybody to get in there. And I don't know if that's a wind surge thing or just a fans were just a little late getting there or the parking issue that you brought up. But either way, they'll figure it out. And somebody wants to go to a wind surge game can figure out what time do I need to leave in order to get there by first pitch. But, man, that was a fun party.
Yeah, I was in one of those lines with my family. It took us a while to get in. I was told later other people had better luck. So we went into the, I guess what you would call the main entrance, Seneca Street, and I was told other entrances moved along more quickly. So, yeah, I would hope that, you know, that the wind surge would get better. I would hope, you know, and maybe people will learn to, I think everybody kind of came at once. Maybe that was part of the issue too.
Yeah.
So that's really been the only, and I don't even know if I would call that a complaint, but I think that was the only issue that maybe some people raised. Shockers, they are 11-1. Over these last 12 games, really been playing well, all phases of the game, it appears. What's your view on what's gotten into the Shockers?
Playing pretty baseball, not kicking and throwing it around. I think that goes a long way in keeping you in games. About the difference between Wichita State and Houston, there were a lot of statistical gaps between the two, but number one is Wichita State played an errorless series here. And I don't know that people give, you know, not give enough credit necessarily, but appreciate the fact that if you just catch and throw the ball, you're going to be at least in games. I think up until now, there have been no real superstars. If you look at the stat sheet, there's no one thing that really jumps off the sheet at you and you can point out and say, that's why they're 19-9 or that's why they're hot right now. And I suppose that's a testament to the team. You know, there's somebody every game, maybe a little different every game, although Paxton Wallace has been unbelievably consistent and so has Corgan Bartlett offensively. But there's somebody else mixed in there in this little 12-game stretch that's doing a little bit of their part. That's a, I don't know if you call them role players. I don't know if you have role players in baseball if they're in the starting lineup, but maybe something that you don't expect from Ross Cadena or Andrew Stewart or something like that. When it's their chance, it seems like everybody, when they've gotten a chance, has contributed at some point. And it sounds a little cliche and a little old school, but I think that's the way Eric Wedge is, and I think that's the way he likes it.
Over those 12 games, Shockers have committed 5 errors, their opponents 24, so that's a huge factor right there. In the previous, before that, 28 games, I think, it was 16 errors by the Shockers, 16 by their opponents. So that's been one of the many dramatic changes. The big difference seems to be the pitching. They're walking a lot fewer people. The numbers are just great. How do you do that as a pitching staff? How do you kind of make that? It's fairly dramatic change.
Well, there's a couple ways, probably, if you, depending on the level of opponent that you're playing, which early on, that was pretty high level, between two against Oklahoma State, two against Arizona, and then the Florida trip, I think there's a possibility that the pitchers that we trotted out there felt like they needed to miss bats or trick them or some combination thereof. And I guess that's a question better for Mike Pelfrey, but what I've seen from, in particular, let's take Preston Snavely, for example. He was awesome last year in that shortened season in his four or five appearances. And I was like, all right, we're on to something here with him. He started off a little rough, and he was probably in that category that you're talking about, early versus now, where he's not walking as many people. But I've always thought with him, the simpler the better. Keep your delivery compact, keep everything going to home plate. He's a big, long dude. So the simpler you make your delivery, the more chances you have to throw consistent strikes. And I'm seeing that on almost everybody. I don't know if they've taken his lead necessarily, but I feel like all those guys, in getting as comfortable as they have with Ross Cadena, are just throwing the ball over the plate. And there's a reason why they're here, because they apparently did that to some degree and some degree of success when they were at high school or junior college. And you can easily stray from that. You can try to trick people. You can try to strike people out. And you can get into a mode of either multiple innings or multiple games where you do that. And sometimes you just have to get back to keeping it as simple as possible. And they seem to have done that.
So, yeah, so Shocker ERA before K-State, 6.04. In the 12 games since, 1.89. So pretty dramatic improvement. I did ask Mike Pelfrey some of these questions. And, you know, pitchers, they always like to say, well, now they're pitching. And I'm never clear exactly what that means. You're a pitcher. How do you translate, well, now they're pitching? What kind of an answer is that? What does that mean?
Well, I suppose it's the difference between a pitcher and a thrower. I'm guessing that's what they're referring to. But it's each hitter that you face brings a different challenge, but everything stays the same in that you need to throw strike one, however you need to do it, whether it needs to be a breaking ball for a strike or a fastball right down the middle. But I think Jace Kaminska is a good example of a guy that has really learned how to pitch here. Coming from such a small high school where he could, with one pitch, breeze through an entire game, let alone a lineup one time through the order. But you got to throw secondary pitches for strikes and fastball counts, and you got to be able to pitch backwards if you need to against the better hitter, soft stuff early, hard stuff late. That's pitching. There's a fine line, Paul, between, you know, clipping each corner and nibbling and falling behind. You know, that to me, that is a, more than anything, a fear of the hitter or fear of the consequences, what's going to happen. But if you just trust your stuff, I'm sure that's a cliche you've heard a bunch before. Trust your stuff, trust what you got here, and trust in your catcher, because Kadena's calling the games. And you'd be surprised how easy it can become sometimes if you just kind of turn your brain off and, all right, let's go in attack mode.
Jace Kaminska, he's the conference pitcher of the week. He got his first start against K-State at home, then he started at Houston, and then he started Saturday against Houston at Riverfront Stadium in front of 7,500 fans. He allowed one earned run in those three games. What does that tell us about Jace Kaminska?
Tells me that he's pretty fearless. And I was thinking about this earlier. What would freshman Shane Dennis have done at Riverfront Stadium in front of 7,509 when he was a freshman? And the answer is not what Jace Kaminska did. I don't think what he did can be undersold either. As a freshman, what it would have been 12 years since a freshman had thrown a CG? I think Jordan Cooper. I think that was him. He was in the Lowell, Cooper, and that bunch. But complete games obviously don't come along very often in the collegiate game anymore, because we're concerned with pitch counts and that sort of thing. But just his polish in coming from a tiny high school to the big time here. That's what's really jumped out at me with Kaminska. And I watched him pretty closely in that Riverfront game. And even though he gave up a hit to start the game, you'll recall the next pitch turned into a double play. He came right after the next guy. And he mentioned it after the game, too, after he gave up the home run to McMillan in the seventh. The idea was come right at the next guy. Don't turn this into something. And so many high school kids, especially guys that came from little bitty high schools, having the focus to, you know, not let your mind wander during the course of a game and staying in attack mode and not being concerned about not striking everybody else out, because he did a lot of that in high school. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a freshman All-America. I don't know what his career arc is going to be, but it's on an upward trend right now. I'm super impressed with him, considering where he came from, especially.
Liam Eddie pitched really well over the weekend in the Houston series. How important is it that they get that kind of Friday night ace kind of effort out of Liam Eddie?
He's got that same mentality that he's always had. Just, I think he's now added a little cutter to go along with the rest of his arsenal. He's always been a strike thrower, too. And I think all these guys have learned from Mike Pelfrey how to pitch in and in off the plate. They're all pretty good at it, including Eddie. And I think sometimes when he got hurt in the past, it was he threw too many strikes. You got to be able to, if you got that good a command, then you need to command it in and in off the plate and get guys off your secondary stuff when they're diving out over the plate. And adding that cutter, being able to go into righties, you saw how easy he can make it look when, he had 16 in a row that he set down at the end of his eight-inning game against Houston, struck out 11. I like him on a Friday. I really do. He's the quote-unquote, you always know what you're going to get from, but there's a little bit of a ceiling there, too. He's not just a really good college pitcher where you're going to get some outs and wins from him. I think he's a pro, and he's got a good combination of mentality plus stuff to back it up.
Liam Eddie pitched the 7-1 win over the Cougars over the weekend, as you mentioned, had 11 strikeouts, allowed two hits and one run in the eight innings. Andrew Stewart, the Shockers didn't commit an error over the past four games. That's their longest stretch of the season. The defense has been really good. It's kind of coincided with Andrew Stewart playing shortstop. How does his defense fit into this hot streak?
It pops. That double play that I was talking about at Riverfront, there was nothing ordinary about it. That kid is a stud. He can play defense. And that was this close to being first and second, nobody out, in an otherwise crazy, cool atmosphere, and he restored order right away. And that double play was no ordinary turn. I've been super impressed with him. And we can bring Paxton Wallace into this, too, to include the left side of the infield. I can't remember. There are errors on the docket. I mean, I think Wallace has four. But in seeing as many innings as I have of these guys, if it's hit to the left side, I'm thinking it's an out. And you can't say that about all college infields, especially the left side of them. But Andrew Stewart can really play. He's a stud.
I'm glad you brought up Paxton Wallace. I didn't have something prepared about him, but I have noticed he seems to be moving really well, really sure-handed, really agile at third base. And in my brain, he's doing those things better than he did the last time I saw him, which would have been 2019. He didn't play last year,
right,
at the back injury. Are you seeing the same, you know, better mobility, better defense over there at third?
100%. There's no ball he seemingly can't get to. And he's got that arm that would make up for any kind of bobble or laying back to get that extra hop, that he's been not only accurate with his throws, but he's got hose. And I particularly like the ones where he has had the time and charge a little bit in order to get a short hop and stay out of the in-between hop. You get an in-between hop at third base, the guy's safe, whether you field it cleanly or not. But he's been able to show the ability to come around balls and field them with forehand or go to the backhand. Even if he's on the line, he's got a good enough arm where he can throw out just about anybody. But, yeah, he looks like he's born to play third base. And the fact that he's healthy is the fun part about that. You feel good for him. The offense is where, you know, you sell tickets and get the headlines, but his defense has been almost as good as Stewart's over there.
I'm glad you brought that up because he's made some really nice plays at third. And, of course, I'm a big Andrew Stewart fan because of the Kevin Hooper comparison. I just can't get enough of that, definitely. Hunter Gibson, he's raised his average from 216 to 316 over this 12-game stretch. So we're kind of lengthening out the lineup. He hit both of his home runs during this stretch, three of his four doubles. What are you seeing from Hunter Gibson?
I think he is, and he's a case, he's a perfect example of the more bats you get, the more comfortable you get, but he's discovering what he can and can't do. And he's swinging and missing quite a bit less. I went back and looked, and I think he was one of the top three hitters on the team last year before the season got halted. So he got off to a good start. I want to say he's 312, 316, right about where he is right now at this point last year. But it's nice that he can play a little first if necessary. Certainly capable DH against right-handers. And you're right. In the middle, toward the bottom of the order, he's not a breather anymore. And he's, I think, like I said, I think he's discovering what he is and what he can and can't do. And that's part of being a good hitter.
Over this 12-game stretch, Hunter Gibson's hitting .410, best on the team. Three doubles, two home runs, and has driven in 13. Let's go back to 2018. I don't know how relevant this is, but I actually just kind of stumbled upon it. We did a podcast at this exact time in 2018 where we kind of talked about where this team was. So we go back to 2018. That's the last time the Shockers were in this kind of position. They were 17-4. They were number six in the RPI. 21 games into the 2018 season. That was Alec Bohm, Grayson Genista, Cody Hoyer. Liam Eddy was on that team and pitching well at that point. Then they got to 19-4 after a big win at ECU. They got to 26-9, and then they kind of slipped. They went 7-12-1 the rest of the way, finished number 54 in the RPI, and did not make the NCAA tournament. Is there a comparison? Does this season feel different? Similar, is this more sustainable in your mind?
Well, I think it's safe. Well, maybe it's not safe to say because I don't have a crystal ball, but this team would seem to have fewer big leaguers on it because there were multiple big leaguers on that 2018 team. The first thing that I got to and raised an eyebrow in comparing the 18 to the 21 team is it didn't seem like that 2018 team had the starting pitching depth this team seems to. You had Eddy, you had Hoyer, and then it was like, now who else do we have? Tyler Davis they mixed in there, Connor Lungwitz they tried out. I'm looking for guys with multiple, Tommy Barnhouse made four starts. They didn't have that one other guy that could either sustain them in a series or frankly, help them make any noise in midweek games because you play midweek games back then. This staff, or at least starting, is deeper, as we've seen with the four starters over three games. And I don't want to anoint Aaron Hosse just yet beyond Chandler Sanburn because Sanburn had a nine-save season in 18, which is nothing to sneeze at. But Hosse, since getting a talking to after the SIU Edwardsville series, has been almost untouchable since then. So there's at least sizable difference for me. And I think the group is greater than the sum of its parts in 2021, whereas you had Genista and Ritter actually led the team in hitting in 2018. And Bohm, you had those three guys and everybody else. And so at least to this point, I think those are some of the differences between the two teams and why we maybe can expect a little bit more from this team in 2018's team, and certainly more capable of staying out of a tailspin, which it seemed like the 18 team fell into after a hot start.
And I think this team is more solid defensively, and that will help a lot in staying out of the tailspin, as you mentioned. But when I went back and looked, that 2018 team, they did well in the midweek. They swept Oklahoma State. I think they swept Kansas. That was a good baseball team. They were just a few wins short of probably getting into an NCAA regional. The American Athletic Conference. ECU is number six in the RPI. The Pirates are very good. They're playing to try to host whatever hosting looks like this season. And then you've got Tulane, this week's opponent for the Shockers, at number 96. Nobody else in the top 100. So that gets me to no midweek games. That seems to be a negative for Wichita State. How's that going to perhaps influence their NCAA tournament resume?
I was going to say it was a negative just from the development standpoint of, are we ever going to see Josh Hansel again? Or are we ever going to see a couple of position players that can't seem to get in the lineup? But since you framed it that way, it is problematic in that you can't get another Oklahoma State or an OU on the schedule or some other good RPI game. And you have to try to keep your guys sharp in inter-squad games, however difficult that might be. So, yeah, I'm with you. I was looking beyond ECU. What are we looking at here the rest of the way? High 90s at best, and anything else could be considered a bad loss if it comes to, what, Cincinnati or Memphis? But, you know, the idea in joining the American was you just win series and you should be fine analytics-wise or RPI-wise or resume-wise. But that's assuming you had midweek games too, and having it taken away this year, I think, hamstrings Wichita State a little bit, especially at this point where they, after ECU, will be a lot of pressure on them to win a lot of the league games.
It's also a crusher from attendance, I think. Yeah. You know, if Oklahoma or even Kansas or Kansas State was rolling into X Stadium tonight, coming off that weekend series, coming off Riverfront Stadium, that would have been interesting to see what kind of attendance bump they may have gotten. What are you most interested in the rest of the season?
In the short term, I'm really interested in this 8-game road trip, what they do at Tulane and Cincinnati, and how that sets them up for ECU. But some of the guys that haven't been able to get in, the good problem to have kind of thing, the relief pitchers that haven't seen much work over the last 8 games because the starters have been so great. Foster Gifford we haven't seen much of. I can't remember the last time Tommy Barnhouse pitched. Is Connery Peters okay? And if he is, when are we going to see him? When do we work him back in there? And some of those not long guys, because Stumpfig has been the one guy that's consistently been in there. But some of these seldom used because our starters have been gone 7 innings. How do we keep those guys sharp? I'll be looking for that. And staying injury-free or COVID-free or whatever. It seems like Eric has got a pretty solid 11 to draw from to play 9. And what happens if somebody goes down? Can Derek Shaver or somebody like him elbow his way in the lineup? He got an opportunity the other day and hit a grand slam. So there's still a long way to go in the season. To have everybody stay healthy is probably way too much to ask. But their depth, position player-wise, is certainly a question mark, but it hasn't had to be answered yet because everybody stayed healthy.
Okay, you mentioned Ryan Stumpfig. Let's wrap it up with him because I'm getting really interested in him. He's kind of a little bit in that anonymous role. You can call it the Dreifert role. I think Brent Kim has tried to do that to sexy it up, but yeah. It's still kind of anonymous. It just feels to me like he's really important to this staff because of his versatility and because he's pitching so well. What's your view on his contribution?
He's just funky enough to be effective one time through the lineup, it seems like. He's done a much better job lately in this hot streak, like everybody, of getting strike one. The thing that's held him back in the past has been his command when it hadn't been there. But those cross his body just a little bit. That 88 looks like 91. I don't know what his spin rate is like. That's a Pelfrey question. But it seems like it plays up and gets on the hitter quicker. And he's pitching with a lot of confidence. And when he comes into a game, I feel like he feels like whenever they take the ball from me, the opponent's score is going to be the same as it is right now. And look back to last year, apparently he's drawn on that because his numbers are almost exactly the same from last year to this. And you're right. If you come in the sixth or the fifth and you don't get to finish the game, most of the time you're not going to get a decision or a save. He has this year. He's vultured like 5 wins. But most generally in this particular role, it's not something that you do in high school. You either start or in some rare cases, you close. But it's hardly ever come in the middle of the game. But it seems like this is a role that he's been made for.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.